Bessie and Sadie Delaney became household names in the early 1990s, and at that time, they were already after the 100 mark. The sisters, alongside reporter Amy Hill Harth, wrote, "Having our say the Delaney sisters' first 100 years." It chronicled the sisters' lives from Jim Crow to the Harlem Renaissance through civil rights. The Georgia Ensemble Theater is presenting the play adaptation of the work, and with us now is an esteemed member of the Atlanta theater community, Andrea Fry. Welcome.
Oh, my.
You are esteemed. So let's release some of that steam.
Okay, let's do. Before I start, I have to embarrass you.
Uh-oh.
Yeah, I feel obligated to. I think you've got a picture in your attic that is aging. Because, what was his name? Dorian Gray?
Yeah, I was going to say, don't go all Salvador Dali on me, Andrea.
No, but you look great.
You
look great.
Sweet.
I'm honored to be here.
Well,
I'm so glad to be here watching you do what you do.
We are honored to have you because, among other accomplishments on stage and directing what's on stage, you're doing that right now about this remarkable, an amazing story about two sisters who were just two of 10. What was the rest of their family like?
An esteemed family. Everybody, 10 kids, and everybody seemed to have had a career of some renown.
And the parents were born into slavery.
Henry Beard Delaney was 7 years old when emancipation happened. So he was actually born into slavery and went on to become the first Episcopal bishop in the United States. Yay! And the mother's name, I can't remember her name, but she was valedictorian at the school at where she met Henry. And so she was a smart, capable woman. And these two people, Henry and Mrs. Delaney, created a family.
Nanny James.
Oh, thank you very, very much. I think we mentioned her name once in the entire script. We talk about her incessantly. But they created a family so strong, so wise, so capable, so giving, so connected to the world, and so committed to being of service to the world.
And I read that they said they had everything anyone could ever want except money.
That's right.
But it didn't stop them from achieving a very prestigious education.
But you know, it's not unlike the tale of a lot of oppressed people, oppressed families, who see themselves not just as existers, not just one who achieves for the sake of achieving, but who must make a difference in the world. And you find this exhibited if you examine the lives of the Delaney family. All of them were tremendous service givers. The ladies that we visit with over time up at Georgia Ensemble, Bessie and Sadie. One was a dentist, I think the second black female dentist in the state of New York. And the other is Sadie, who was a teacher all her life. And they were taught early on. It was part of the Delaney mantra, you must give service. You must make the world better. You are oppressed, you come from oppression, you come from disenfranchisement, so you are obligated to give back. It's something that's runs through the blood of lots of oppressed people, and they had it. They had it in spades. They're extraordinary. To spend these past weeks with these ladies has been
whose lives mirrored the entire 20th century.
Oh my God!
I mean, we not only see Jim Crow and civil rights and human rights emerge, but we also, you know, witnessed all of that happened with women, and yet they remained very traditional in their way.
Very humble, extraordinarily proud. Oh, proud, proud
now,
people.
One was a little bit feistier than the other.
Yes.
Describe
dear
each
Bessie,
of them, would
Bessie,
you?
Bessie was very feisty.
She was Bessie the older was, one?
No, Bessie was the younger one,
she
actually.
Was, okay.
2 years younger. We meet them in 1993 when they are... Bessie is 101 and Sadie is 103.
And within full faculties. I mean, living alone,
oh,
caring
absolutely.
For themselves.
Absolutely. They're better off than I am now, and I'm not quite there yet.
Well, I know in reading the book when it came out and reading reviews in the early 90s, I think it was, Amy Harth,
right.
to whom they told the story, she was in disbelief at how they could recall the most minute details of occurrences decades
and do you know
before.
What they attributed their longevity and acuteness of mind to?
Do tell.
Never having been married.
The reason being?
Interesting. Well, the follow-up was we never had men to worry us to death. So maybe there's some truth to that. Having been married three times, I can't say whether that is true or not. But
the Delaney sisters left Raleigh, North Carolina for New York.
Yep.
And
spent 75 years in New York City before they moved out to the Burbs.
What happened when they arrived in Harlem? What was life as they found it in Harlem?
Well, first of all, these country girls, country, quote unquote, Raleigh, North Carolina, who led fairly, I mean, secluded lives.
Sheltered.
They taught and did stuff.
Yeah.
But yeah, it was
proper.
They will tell you, you know, we were too... sheltered, but when they got to New York, they took the town by storm. Everybody in Harlem ended up knowing the Delaney sisters for their work, for their wit, for their commitment to their people. They were loved and beloved by so many people. Bessie, of course, Bessie's office was supposed to have been the center for civil rights activities
this
in Harlem.
This was the dentist.
That's the dentist. Okay. And she's the younger one, the feisty one, who didn't take any crap, who was almost lynched once.
Oh.
Yeah, well, that's a story you have to come see the play to find out about.
Tell us a bit about that, if you can. Andrea, how do you take this very rich, chatty oral history and make it work on stage?
Well, the sisters themselves do half the work by being so witty, by being so bright, by having so many opinions and observations about the life in which they lived, that they could sit down and paint their toenails and we would happily sit there and watch and laugh and giggle, but Emily Mann, who wrote the script, has created a wonderful device for watching them. We sit down and we see their photograph albums. We actually see it. We see all of the pictures that they tell us about. And they have these vivid, wonderful stories about their family and growing up as a child, as children through Jim Crow. And then... they let us know that it's their father's birthday, so they're gonna cook dinner.
yeah,
for them to celebrate their father's birthday.
The New York Times review of the play back in the 90s said, don't go on an empty stomach.
That's right.
Do you have your actors actually cooking and baking?
Oh, they're actually cooking. They make a cake. They make ambrosia. They stuff the chicken. They dress the ham. Yeah, this is for real.
So we're going to be very hungry if we haven't eaten
well,
before.
Yeah. There is some give and take, but I'm not going to tell you which we give and which we take. You will have to come and figure out let me say this, 75% of what we cook is absolutely real, and the cast has been known to gobble it up after rehearsal.
Well, I think the story is one that's worth gobbling up. Finally, Andrea, what do you think inspires you most about their story?
Inspires and frightens me is that the things that they observed, the things that touched them most deeply and which they raged about, the state of the race and the state of the race in this country still exist. They are, 100 plus years old, but they were seers, diviners of the world.
This is why we must hear their stories.
Oh, you'll laugh. You'll cry. You'll say, well done. Well done, ladies.
Well, I've said that of you many times in your work.
Bless you.
Andrea Fry, it has been a pleasure. And having our say, the Delaney Sisters' first 100 years is on stage now, a production of Georgia Ensemble Theater in Roswell. Thank you again.
Oh, thank you, Lewis.
The play runs through March 5th.